Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. On this morning's show, I want to do a kind of State of the Union overview on sports parenting issues in the year 2019. That is, I want to devote a show in which we pause and reflect on where we are with kids and sports today, and to get a sense of where we've been and, quite frankly, where we're going. And to help me in my discussion this morning, I've asked my good friend Bob Bigelow to join me. Now, for loyal listeners of The Sports Edge, you know that Bob is one of the nation's leading advocates on sports parenting issues. Like myself, he's been at the forefront of the movement to educate and enlighten parents and coaches about the shifting patterns and trends in youth sports. Bob's a former All-Ivy first-team All-League at the University of Pennsylvania. He was a first-round draft choice in the NBA, and after retiring from the NBA in his playing career, Bob, who's based outside of Boston, he became involved in youth sports, and he and I share many of the same philosophies when it comes to kids and sports. Bob, it's always good to talk with you.
Rick, always a pleasure. Well, you and I have been doing this culture-changing stuff for 30-plus years.
That is correct. People always ask me, as I'm sure they ask you, like, you know, where do you find these topics to talk about? And it's in every day's headlines. It's simple
what
as
that. What the heck have you done? Has anything changed?
In fact, let me start this conversation this morning by asking you a question I don't think I've ever asked you before, and that is, how did you become involved in sports parenting issues?
Actually, the best answer I have to that question, Rick, is I had kids.
Well, that's a good place to start.
My first guy came along 31 years ago. My second guy came along 26 years ago. They're roughly the age of your children.
Mm-hmm.
And I started asking questions, the first one being, what are my kids getting into in sports? Because, as you know, because we're similar ages, our sports experiences had been so much different. Basically unplanned pick-up play amongst ourselves with no adults.
That's correct.
And all of a sudden, I wake up 20 years later with my first child, and I'm thinking about this saying, geez, when the heck did organized soccer become a sport? Why do we have it? What's out there? Why is this all happening?
I mean, I started
asking all these why questions back in the late 80s and early 90s,
yeah.
And of course, I came up with no answers. So I decided to try and get some answers.
I mean, I have to tell you, my experiences very much parallel yours. I got involved with youth sports, as you mentioned, with my own kids coming along. And all of a sudden, the world in which you and I grew up with, where there was pickup games, there were no parents involved, there was no uniforms, no scoreboards. We just went out and played pickup basketball. You played touch football, on the playgrounds or in the streets, whatever it might have been. That was all changing. And now, as you said, all of a sudden, every community in America was being introduced to ASO soccer, and it was sort of like almost considered mandatory if your kid's 5 or 6, they got to go play soccer.
Well, Rick, think of it, a quarter century, 1965,
yeah,
when we were kids, to 1990. Basically, kids' sports went from 98% unorganized to 98% organized.
Yes.
In 25 years.
Bob, I did a show last week about asking a very simple question as to whether or not our kids today have as much fun as we did growing up. And a lot of the answers were sort of saying, well, the kids today, they don't understand, they don't have the same spontaneity, the freedom to experiment as we did, because now they go out when they're 5 or 6 years old and they have to conform to the expectations of their coaches. And hey, we're playing here to win. Don't fool around on the field. If you're right-handed, don't throw left-handed. I mean, it's just changed dramatically, and I do
think, and again, that as you know, may be the most amorphously defined word in the English language.
Mm-hmm,
fun. I
mm-hmm.
mean, what the heck is fun?
but
you know, you and I had our own version. You know, today their fun is pulling up some electronic gadget.
That's true. That is true.
Hey, that seems to be a lot of fun to them.
Well, and of course, you know, there are a lot of people, a lot of sociologists who say, well, the reason why kids are so attracted to video sports and e-games is because of the fact that it's an activity that most parents don't understand and haven't been able to figure out how to put structure into it. So the kids see that as their
own
way.
I'll raise my hand on that one, Rick.
Yeah. Well, me too.
I haven't figured that one out.
All I know is that I keep reading how colleges are now offering scholarships.
Can you imagine e-sports?
I mean,
they now have scholarships. And think of how cheap the sport is. You can play it across the world and not go anywhere.
Well, except you got to buy the equipment and stuff to begin with,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't know what. Yeah, of course, the hardware is pretty expensive stuff. But you don't have to fly from East Coast to West Coast. I mean, it is amazing. And I've read about it, and of course, I feel like I'm a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court trying to figure that out.
I'm telling you, but that's the reality, and it's not going away. And by the way, we're talking with Bob Bigelow about the state of the art of kids' sports today, and Bob was obviously just remarking how things have changed dramatically, and I certainly echo those sentiments. But let me ask you for a second, Bob, about the whole role of parents. Do you think we've made progress in enlightening or educating moms and dads about, understanding or coming to grips with their expectations for the young athletes?
I think selfishly, which would be me and you, I think we've made some progress. I mean, not just you and me, but, there are others out there.
Yes.
Trying to spread a message that these are games for kids, not for us. The challenge you have, of course, Rick, and this is the mixed answer, yes and no, is think of the turnover of parents and coaches and kids in youth sports. I've always said a generation of youth sports is about 6 years, say age 6 to age 12, or
mm-hmm.
age 9 to age 15. So you're turning over millions of kids and millions of adults. So you've got to re-educate the next generation. Are we getting through to the next generation? And the one after that, I don't know. Are ones who have left it behind, many do. Yes, they go on to other activities with them and their kids. So I don't know. The answer is yes. I think we've been out there trying to spread the good word. But there's just so many people to spread the word to.
Well,
I don't know if you can really make a dent.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying about the turnover and the fact that just every 6 years there is a new crop of sports parents who need to be educated or enlightened. Although I do think as the years pass on, the fact is that there's now a generation of kids today who grew up where they were aware that there had to be some restraints or education placed upon their own moms and dads. And maybe that sort of has finally sort of made them understand that they got to keep their priorities in order. But again, it's, we always keep hearing every day about some parent who is either attacking a coach or is basically saying, you know what, my kid's not getting enough playing time here, so I'm just going to transfer my kid to a different school. I mean, we know this has become part of the American landscape.
Yeah. No, you talk about choice, which is an American value. You got a choice. And now our sports, of course, whether it's interscholastic at the high school level, prep school, youth, with all the different teams and club teams and this and that and the other thing. Parents will be constantly searching around for, quote unquote, a better option.
Yeah. And
in their mind.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, obviously, they're always looking ahead because, and I understand this, and I am very sensitive to this, as I'm sure you are as well. Parents want the very best for their youngster. That's a good sort of approach to parenting. But I do think that, when a kid is in a situation, let's say in a high school team, and he or she is not getting is not a starter and is not getting the playing time that they desire or their parents desire for their kid, instead of coming to grips with that adversity, it's always much easier to say, you know what, the coach obviously doesn't know how to evaluate talent, so we're just going to transfer you to another school where there's a better coach and a better program. And that's sort of going down the wrong pathway because, look, you and I grew up at a time where adversity was a major, major positive when it came to kids in sports.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, you and I have obviously over our three-plus decades built up a huge network of athletic directors and coaches at many different levels. And what you know and what I know is that athletic directors, I've told many of them that what I'm trying to do and what Rick Wolf is trying to do is we're trying to calm down the adults before they get to you.
Yes, yes.
Because, of course, when you and I were growing up, the adults didn't really have much to do with us between kindergarten and sixth grade or seventh or eighth grade. We were sort of on our own playing those pickup games you mentioned.
Yeah, and
now, of course, the parents are the agents of the kids starting
yes.
in kindergarten.
Yeah.
They're the ones with the kids throughout their whole sports career before they even hit high school. So by the time they hit high school, do you think they're going to say, okay, kid, I've had it with you from kindergarten to eighth grade. Go see the high school coaches. I'll let them take care of you from now on. Now they've built up the dream of some athletics post-high school because, heck, my kid's been pretty good since kindergarten.
Well,
so I'm not going to drop them off at the freshman door now and give up.
No, in fact, it just ratchets up. All right, look. I want to ask you about the whole travel club team mentality, because that's a huge issue and obviously didn't exist when we were growing up. But let me take a break. We're talking this morning with Bob Bigelow. We're talking about youth sports and where we are today and whether we've made progress and what's going to happen down the road. I just find, of course, this topic to be of endless fascination, and I hope you're enjoying the conversation as well. But first, let me take some commercials and a sports update, and we'll be back. Stay with me. Back here on the Sports Edge, we're talking this morning with Bob Bigelow. Bob was a first-round draft choice out of Penn back in the 70s, and after his playing career came to an end and became a dad himself, he got involved in sports parenting issues, and like myself, he hasn't really stopped. Because this is a topic, an issue, as all of you know who listen to the show, it's just something that gets deeper and more interesting all the time. And Bob, before the break, I mentioned I want to get into the whole impact of travel on club teams. Now, we both know, we're veterans of these, we know that travel on club teams are here to stay. They are everywhere, all over the country, every town, and they seem to pop up like mushrooms. And, of course, the impact that this has is that if a kid shows even a glimpse of athletic talent on a travel team, invariably the mom and dad, and again, we know the parents pay for these kids to be on these teams, that's going to go back to the high school coach and say, look, my kid was a star in a summer team in lacrosse or in hockey or in basketball, whatever it might have been, so why isn't he or she starting now on the high school team? It all comes back to the poor high school coach or the AD. Bob, I have a feeling, and I'm curious to get your thoughts about this. I have a feeling that within not too far in the far near future, we're going to see a situation where high school sports, the traditional varsity sports, are going to be basically replaced by travel teams. The best athletes in the high school are going to play for their travel teams and not play for their high school team.
Well, I mean, it's already happened in some way, shape, or form. I would disagree with you. I know you and I have been talking about this for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's something you first said to me, you know, probably back in the mid-90s. You know, football may be the only remaining high school interest. But I think what's going to happen, you may be familiar with high school boys soccer, and I think it's a girls soccer now. There is now something called, I can't remember the name of it, but basically it siphons off the top 10% of high school soccer players in America.
Right.
And they go play club. Okay, so what you're left with, if it's the top, I'm sorry, it's the top 1%, not 10%, I misspoke. You've still got 99% of the kids playing high school soccer. Basketball, we have a situation here in New England now, and it's all around the country, where you have private independent prep schools that are siphoning off, especially on the boys' side, the top 1%, 5%, 10%. Okay, so you still have high school sports. It just may not be quite as talented as it was 10, 20, or 30 years ago.
Well, let me stop you there because that's, I think, is the big difference. That whereas
yep.
when we were growing up, you know, making the varsity, that was the
oh, sure. All your best kids stayed. And
right.
then if they went to prep school, they took a graduate year afterwards.
But like now, that. As yep. you said, well, the top 1% in soccer, if they want to go play for U.S. Soccer Federation or the kids
yep.
going to play AAU basketball, the kids who still enjoy playing the sports will play for their high school team, but they're not the best kids in the high school. They're just not the best players because the better players
are
playing
sports. So now it's almost like the NCAA men's basketball tournament. And, of course, all the best players end up going to the NBA earlier than later.
Mm-hmm.
So you could argue that NCAA men's basketball is not as talented now as it was 20, 30 years ago. when kids like Patrick Ewing and those guys stayed for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, accept it. Fine. But, I mean, the tournament has done fine. It actually might have made it even more competitive because these teams with younger stars, soon to be NBA players, or these teams that you know, have better players sometimes get beaten by the teams that are lesser of quality, so to speak, but they have five seniors playing for them. And these are 22, 23-year-old young men.
Yeah, it's
so, I mean, you know, you can look at the issue two ways. But in the high school level, which I want to get back to, let's not mention college, is very simply you've got issues now, not just on season, because AAU basketball, just like AAU basketball and baseball and lacrosse, is still basically an off-season sport.
Yes.
If your basketball is traditionally a winter sport, then AAU is the other 9 months of the year. So AAU isn't plucking kids off high school yet. But what it does is it makes a very fluid market for kids who no longer go back to their high school and then they end up in some prep school the next year,
well, that sort of thing.
So you've sort of got to peel back the layers of the onion a bit.
Yeah, but I was reading not too long ago where there were top high school basketball players in California who were saying, you know what, I'm not going to even bother playing for my high school team. And these are good quality high school basketball teams. I'm just going to play AAU. I'm not even going to fight. You know, why bother with the high school
coach? Yeah, but as I said, there's no AAU system that I know of that is between November and March.
That's what I'm getting at. But they're saying
the other 8 months of the year, yes, it's out there.
They're playing. You know, 3/4 of the year.
They may not want to play for their high schools for whatever reason. Yep. Maybe they think they can get showcased better to the college scouts by playing the other 8 months of the year in some whoop-de-doo AAU program.
But this is where we're going. I mean, this is so...
I think inevitably, and whether we're talking 10 years down the road or 30 years down the road, hey, you and I may be still speaking on the radio, we hope. I think we're moving inexorably towards a club system, but the high school system will remain. It's just a matter of what the quality and the talent level will be.
It'll be more... It'll be heading towards the direction of intramurals as opposed to...
Maybe. And again, I mean, the National Federation of High School people will tell you, and they've added bowling and they've added bass fishing in the Midwest and some other sports. I mean, we've never had so many kids participating in high school sports in this country. It's now over 8 million, which is a pretty good number considering we have something like 15 or 16 or 17 million high school students. You know, half of them are playing something in the sports realm.
But at the same time,
you know, we obviously have a siphoning and a tip of the iceberg system that's growing up around high school sports.
You know, you mentioned about bass fishing, which being a high school varsity sport.
Gee, why wasn't that around when you and I were?
Well, I always think about that, and I'm thinking, well, you know, and they give out college scholarships for that as well. And I'm thinking,
I'm sure they do. Hey, if they're doing it for esports, why not for bass fishing?
So what does the bass get out of this? Does the fish get a scholarship too?
It provides someone with a good meal somewhere, I guess. Hey, did you ever think 20 years ago, Rick, we'd be talking about bass fishing?
Oh my gosh!
Hey, all your people in Illinois are going to start calling you. We're dumping all over the people in the bass fishing.
Yeah, we're talking with Bob Bigelow, folks. You can find him online. You can talk to him about bass fishing.
And I have nothing on bass fishing online, unfortunately.
But you know, it's got to be so perplexing for young parents today when they're hoping, of course, like any mom and dad, that maybe their kid has some athletic ability, and the kid gets to be 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. And now they have to sort of figure out, okay, what do I do? Do I start? Do I specialize my kid? Do I put him or her in all different programs? I mean,
I get a letter every week. This week it was from a father of a fourth grade girls basketball player. Yeah. I'll get another one next week from the father or mother of a third grade whatever soccer player. What do I do?
And I feel as you do for these moms and dads because – It's just very, very complicated. And you know, of course, we all know that there's a sense of, geez, I'm competitive. I want my kids to be competitive. And if I don't have them specialize in this one sport by the time they're 5 or 6, they're not going to be able to keep up with all the peers who are specializing. It's just...
I tell them all the details, all the surveys, all the stuff. I say, it doesn't matter until puberty, at the earliest.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter at all.
And they don't hear that, I'm afraid.
Well, they hear it. They don't necessarily want to act upon it.
Yeah, I guess so.
I said, play as many sports as you can with the kids. and you reasonable listen, to your family time and, you know, all the other kids you might have in your household. But it doesn't make any difference at all till after puberty.
And they, and as you said, they hear this. I don't think it sinks in because they're so busy looking around and saying, well, my friend is playing soccer all year round at the age of eight, and this one is playing, you know, is swimming all year round. It doesn't make any difference, but they don't want to hear that because they don't understand. They're not sure of the guarantee down the road that the kid's going to
end up. By the way, when they are getting propositioned by the club person, always out there, I have them ask one question. Do you have a financial interest in the advice you just gave me and my daughter or son? I said, ask that question. Well, and look at their face very closely right after you ask it.
And the other question I always tell parents to ask of the travel or club team coach, can you tell me how many of your kids went on to get college scholarships for the sport? And that's sort of, you know,
It's interesting. You could run into somebody whose kids did, you know, depending on level of the competition and stuff. So, but as I say, the financial interest, because then go back at them and say the studies have been done for decades. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well,
you know, but they're obviously they have to fill the pipeline with 12-year-olds and 10-year-olds.
It's a business.
Generation. I said, do you have a financial interest? Tell me.
It's a good question. All right, look,
asked it of many folks myself. Go ahead. Tell me.
Yeah.
Don't sell me short. You know who you're talking to here.
All right,
they need to do. They need to recruit the next generation.
It's a business. We know that. I mean, it's a for-profit operation.
Your business will go out of business if you don't have kids.
Bob, let me take a break here. We're talking with Bob Bigelow. We're talking about, obviously, where we are today with sports parentings and where we're going with this. And as you heard, these are real issues. These are real questions. All right, let me take a quick time out. I'll be back. Stay with me. Back here on the Sports Edge. Hey, don't forget, Ed Randall follows the Sports Edge today at 9 o'clock. And, of course, Ed will be talking baseball. Make sure you get the latest what's going on in spring training from Ed Randall. And, as always, I invite you to check out my website at AskCoachWolf.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter at AskCoachWolf as well. Right now I'm talking with my colleague Bob Bigelow on the state of sports parenting. We're having a very wide-ranging conversation because Bob and I have been doing this for a long time. And we're trying to figure out if we're making any real progress in terms of trying to help.
Hey, many people might say we've been doing it too long, Rick.
Well, I don't know about that, but certainly we have seen.
How about your wife? My wife might say the same thing.
My wife has been a saint when it gets to be a Saturday night and we're out somewhere at a party or whatever, and I say, hey, got to go home, got to go to bed because I got to do my show the next day. So
well, my wife just closes the door of my office here. It's starting to get too loud.
I do want to talk to you about the whole issue of concussions. Now, you know, we both know that concussions have been front and center as a huge concern, obviously for parents, whether if they want their kid to decide if they're going to play tackle football. I also have concerns, which I want to talk to you about as well, Bob, about the other sports, the other contact sports, like soccer and ice hockey and baseball. People don't seem to understand that concussions take place in those sports as well. But, you know, the whole history of concussions, you mentioned to me during the break that our colleague Doug Abrams, the law professor at the University of Missouri, that he may have been at the forefront in sort of ringing the bell about concussions.
Pardon your pun.
Pun.
So.
Yes.
Yep. No, he was. I remember Doug first started distributing all those articles probably about 20 years ago, in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And in those articles, from the first time he started doing it, there were occasionally he sort of lumped them all together, the head ringing, the head banging, the concussion, that sort of thing. So he was Doug was really leading the charge 20 years ago. And then, as I told you off the air here, that Eric Lundros, the great hockey player for the Flyers, decided to retire because the doctor told him his next concussion might be his last.
Yeah.
And then it sort of built from there. I think it was an NHL thing, and then eventually it was the NFL and football and all that other, all those other sports that started joining. But as I said, there has been no bigger issue, maybe in the whole sports world, at least from the injury side, no doubt, the last 20 years in concussions.
I remember some years ago, Chris Nowinski had published a book, or it may have been self-published, but Chris
He came out of Harvard. I know Chris a little. He probably played football at Harvard. He became a wrestler.
Right.
At Harvard probably 15 years ago, I'm going to guess.
Right. He was a lineman at Harvard, and he had some concussions, and he played it in college.
And then he entered the Wrestling Federation.
Right.
For a little while. They called him Harvard or something, and that was his pseudonym when he wrestled. And I actually met Chris and Bob Cantu, who was the doctor up this way.
Right.
I met them at a function where I spoke and they spoke. They probably started, and then the Legacy Institute from BU, Boston University, that was all like 15 years ago. This started to really percolate.
And Nowinski and Dr. Cantu were very outspoken about the fact that this is an issue that has to be paid attention to. And of course, as you both know, the NFL was sort of slow to pick up on this for obvious reasons.
But now, of course,
it has. So, the first immediate question that any sports parent asks if their kid, their son wants to play football is, okay, well, let's talk about tackle football. And, Dr. Cantu actually came on my show and said, I would advocate that nobody plays tackle football until they're at least 14.
Still freshman year, 14.
But he said, obviously with the brain being developed, but he also said the real problem is that the neck muscles aren't developed enough to support the head, and the neck is going to, the brain's going to sort of, the head's going to flip-flop back and forth, causing more
concussions. Well, plus the other thing, you're wearing a helmet, which is not a small piece of gear. It's pretty heavy. So your head is flopping around with the helmet on it, which just adds the weight to the head.
People, I get lots of press releases, as I'm sure you do, about the fact that, there's a new breakthrough with concussions in football or the helmets.
Yep.
The fact is, all these doctors say you can't prevent concussions. It doesn't matter what kind of helmet you have, concussions are still going to take place. It's as simple as that.
Rick, 20 years ago, I had a conversation with a big-time high school football coach in Texas. As you well know, they take their football fairly seriously down there.
Mm-hmm.
And very good guy. I don't remember how I got to him, how he got to me. And he was telling me, and this had nothing to do with concussions, he was saying kids do not need to play tackle football until freshman year. As long as they're running around being athletic, playing soccer, playing this, playing that, we'll take them freshman year. They'll be fine.
Yeah, I tell you,
it's one of the biggest myths the tackle football play, and I know you'll probably get calls about this because a lot of people are into youth football and they have programs. You don't need to play tackle football from kindergarten to eighth grade to be a better football player when you're in high school.
There's a
because it's a late blooming sport. The kids grow later.
I couldn't agree with you more. I know I didn't play tackle football until I was a freshman. I played flag football. And that's become very popular.
Or you ran around, and it's a sport of mass and speed.
Yep.
And as I've said for years, go find me a 10-year-old massive speedy kid. The massive ones aren't speedy, and the speedy ones aren't massive.
There's a quarterback you may be familiar with up in New England named Tom Brady.
Yeah, I've heard of him. Pretty good player.
He didn't start playing tackle football until he was 14.
I met his dad. His dad told me he played San Mateo freshman team. They were 0-8.
Yes.
He was drafted 199.
Yes.
Sixth round. Don't ever let anybody tell you, the Patriots included, they knew what this kid was going to be. 199. Talk about a late bloomer.
I'm telling you, I mentioned a minute ago, Bob, we were talking with Bob Bigelow this morning, talking about the other sports that parents feel, it's much safer to play soccer. Now, I didn't play soccer as a kid, but I watched my kids play soccer right through high school. And when you go to a high school soccer match these days, if you're not familiar with it, you'll be amazed and a little bit terrified how much physical contact takes place.
There's so many players and so few referees.
Well, I mean, the fact is, if there's a ball,
you can't catch everything.
And the fact that the action in front of the net, if there's a corner kick and the kids are trying to jump up to head the ball into the net, you're going to bang a head against one of your opponents.
Well, you're banging your head against someone else's head, or you're banging a head against the ball that might be traveling at 40 or 50 miles an hour.
Yeah, I just seems to me, if you're going to be heading, you might as well wear a helmet out there because, people don't seem to think it that way. I mean,
I think the soccer people have gotten, and I think on the girls' side and their necks and their heads and the development stage is different than the boys. I think the soccer people are listening and trying to do something, and now you've got the lacrosses of the world and you always got the hockey, and they tend to be padded. But as you well know, sometimes the helmets, and this is what the NHL worried about, how many years ago, 30, when helmets became mandatory in the NHL?
Yes.
that people, guys would start using them as spears.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, what they worried about in football. How many years ago? 60, 70, 80 years ago?
But,
with helmets? Rugby is one of those sports where you can get concussions, but they don't wear helmets, and they sort of learn to tackle differently because you're not going to spear a guy with an unhelmeted head.
And I'm glad to hear that, of course, like New Jersey, the state of New Jersey just passed a law which is going to limit the amount of contact at high school football.
And all the other states are going to go the same
direction. Yeah, they're all going to follow suit. And of course, as you said, people are studying how rugby players tackle in such a way that they don't have as much a preponderance of concussions. We know the hockey players today, all the kids wear helmets. Although I would tell you with lacrosse, I was talking to my daughters, both who played lacrosse in high school, about wearing a helmet playing lacrosse, and they said, no, that would just basically make things worse. Because
the girls don't wear, do they wear helmets now? They didn't at one point, right? When your daughters played high school lacrosse, did they wear helmets?
No, and now I believe it's optional, but most of the girls who play lacrosse don't want to do it because they feel it just leads to more contact with the opposing sticks.
With the helmet.
Yeah, so.
Yep.
Hey, Bob, I got to tell you, obviously, as I said a few minutes ago, we could talk about these things, you and me, for hours, because we're so passionate about
this. Is it Sunday morning? Or we could talk about it till 1 o'clock this afternoon.
But unfortunately.
Well, you need advertisers.
Yes, exactly. And I have to, unfortunately, wrap up this show. I know you continue to do a lot of speaking around the country. People can go to your website, I assume.
They can go to my website, bob-bigelow. .com, or you can always email me. There's so much propaganda on me around the internet. You'll find me.
Good, good. Well,
if
Bob,
you're really interested.
Yeah, they'll find you for sure. Hey, listen, my friend, thank you again for taking time, and as always, a pleasure to chat with you.
You're welcome, Rick. I wish we could do this every month.
Terrific. Thanks, Bob. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, Rick.
My thanks again to Bob Bigelow. He obviously is as passionate about sports parenting as I am, and of course, as you heard, he has lots of insights as well. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. I'll be back with more. Stay with me. I just want to basically conclude today by saying, look, sports parenting, we all know it's gotten so complicated, so complex in the last 20, 30 years. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, it's very difficult to be a sports parent today because it's so, so difficult to make your way through the arcane and Byzantine world of knowing which way you should go with your child. I still believe, and I know that Bob Bigelow feels the same way, you got to sort of follow what your child wants to do. Let them lead the way. They will tell you what sport they want to play and how much they want to play of it. It's as simple as that. Just be cautious about when you sometimes put a little too much extra pressure on your youngster to play either baseball or soccer or ice hockey. Let them lead the way. Okay, that's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks this morning to Tom Lugauer and Ed Arzuman. Stick around for Ed Randall. He's up next. I'll see you next week right here on the Sports Edge.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.